Word of mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. The military entertainment complex has been quietly developing for decades. The Pentagon helped sponsor the first personal computers, a few big-budget Hollywood films, and funded the MIT graduate students who created the first video game, called Space War, in 1962. For decades, the military has used video games and digital simulations to train troops.
Alpha Team, welcome to your first training exercise scenario at Griffin Base. Your objective is to locate and activate a radio transponder that looks just like this one. You pass or fail as a team, so don't leave anyone behind. Good luck. Over.
Take the low road. Let's get them.
That sound from the game America's Army, originally developed as a rebranding effort, the Call of Duty-style first-person shooter grew to become an essential training tool for new recruits and has even worked its way into public school lesson plans. Corey Mead is assistant professor of English at CUNY's Baruch College and author of Warplay, Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict. He spoke with Virginia Prescott about the history of military video games and the role they play in education, healthcare, and preparing for war.
Corey, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks so much, Virginia.
Now, you write a lot in the book about the development of America's Army, including the man who came up with it, Colonel Casey Wardinsky. Tell us a little bit about its development and why the Army would even invest in a game like that.
Well, it's funny because when you talk about the Army as a broad thing, it really stemmed from a few visionary individuals, Casey Wardinsky being the prime example. He was a colonel, and he actually was the top economist in the Army. And what the Army had found in the late 1990s was that their recruitment numbers were just terrible. And part of that was because people had this impression of the Army as being by far the worst of the services. It was considered sort of dirty, unglamorous, something for people who didn't have any other shots in life. And so for Wardinsky, he wanted to do a couple things, and he happened upon the game as the way to get it across to young people. His kids were playing a lot of games, for one thing, which made him interested in how popular shooter games were. And so what a game could do is, first of all, it could put across an image of the Army that showed, from his perspective, that it wasn't just, you know, infantry trudging through the muck and getting shot, like the image of Vietnam that was still stuck in a lot of people's heads. And then secondly, he wanted to attract the kind of recruits that the Army would actually want, in other words, higher skilled people. And part of this was economic for him because the Army loses tons of money each year on people who sign up and then end up dropping out of basic training. So the Army wastes hundreds of thousands of dollars per person on that. So he had this idea of, hey, we'll have a game. It'll show that there's 200 different specialties in the Army. You don't just have to be the infantry guy with the gun, right? And it'll also help attract the kind of people who we want because they can play this game and they can see what the reality of life in the Army is like. And if they don't like it, they won't waste our time and sign up and then end up dropping out.
Games that the military is now developing don't only simulate conflict, but some of them, like you write about Tactical Iraq, this was developed in 2005, right. VBS2, what kind of skills are they trying to strengthen?
It's everything that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq threw at the soldiers that was different from the traditional role of a soldier going in and shooting, right, or having a large tank battle. And it's everything that's tied in with counterinsurgency. So that's building relationships with locals, which involves speaking the language. It's understanding cultural cues. It's using diplomacy at times, along with obviously like the shooting and the violence and the force that goes with it. So what these games were intended to do is, in a very quick time, like with a game like Tactical Iraqi, or there's a bunch of versions of that game for whatever language is spoken where the soldiers are going, it gives you 2 weeks of training on the basic language and cultural skills you'd need, like understanding that keeping your sunglasses on is an insult when you're talking to an Iraqi. Mm. Of course, the flip side of that is asking whether 2 weeks on a game is actually going to give someone the real skills they need, right, or whether it's just sort of a cover.
Oh, I guess that becomes one of the unanswerable questions here. What is the balance between this virtual training and this kind of muddy boots training that soldiers have traditionally had to go through?
that relates to a broader question, which is that the military itself hasn't necessarily done the most successful implementing of this game-based training because it hasn't developed what that relationship should be between boots-on-the-ground training and virtual training. So some people, some colonels, for example, that are big believers in the virtual training will take their people through, you know, a week or two of training on one of the major games, right? There's other people that might be more stuck in the past who won't train their soldiers through that as well. And so you have this issue of, are people getting unequal training? And, you know, the Pentagon itself is really lacking in having a sort of overall coherent policy of how this new training should be used.
How have gaming companies benefited from innovations and hundreds of millions of dollars invested by the military in creating these training games?
Well, the first way, I mean, this dates back several decades, is the entire games company itself rests on a military-developed infrastructure. And so the various technologies used in games were driven by the military. And it wasn't until the mid-90s at some point where the games companies finally surpassed the military. And at this point, you know, the situation is reversed where the military buys its best technology from the games companies. It's sort of like the, you know, the student leading the teacher. The games industry wouldn't exist without the military. And today, the military wouldn't be able to capitalize on what's being done in games without the games industry.
However, you point out that the Pentagon is now leading the education industry
Yes.
in the development of games.
Well, that's one of the most interesting things to me. To me, that's the question from which I wrote the book, which is that how is it that this institution, the Pentagon, which is conservative, lumbering bureaucracy, is in many ways, when it comes to education today, so much more innovative than our public schools? Really, the last 13 years or whatever of conflict pushed the military ahead of the schools in terms of, okay, we have to break this traditional mold of how people learn, which is kind of they sit there and information is deposited into them. It's called the banking model of education, where they're just sort of receptacles for teacher wisdom. And the military pushed this new idea of soldiers having to learn how to think as opposed to what to think. That's one of the big talking points that comes from the Pentagon now in terms of their education.
We're talking about what's been called the military entertainment complex, the relationship between the military game developers and education, with author Corey Mead. He's author of a book called Warplay, Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict. Let's go back to America's Army. 30 years ago, the idea of having a sort of war game inside of schools was almost unthinkable. How is it used? How is it taught?
So what happened is that there's this educational content provider called Project Lead the Way in upstate New York, and they're very much focused on STEM education, which is the big buzz these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So they are pre-approved in all 50 states to give their curricula to whatever public school district wants to use it. So the Army, in wanting to get into the schools, that was blocked from a lot of schools because people don't want the military recruiting, right? So what it did was it provided its game to Project Lead the Way. And since it's bundled with Project Lead the Way, it doesn't have to be approved by any school districts or boards or anything like that because it's bundled in with this pre-approved curricula. You know, and interestingly enough, when you take America's Army, the guy, Casey Wardinsky, who developed the game, retired from the Army. And he's now a school superintendent. He started in Denver, and now he's down in Huntsville, which is the same city where America's Army, the game, is still made. And so he's doing this brand new curriculum that's starting literally this fall of doing a separate cyber war preparation curricula for his students. So they'll do classes related to cyber defense, and they'll also use stuff that's being recycled from the America's Army game into the Huntsville curriculum. And if they want to, the students that thrive on that, they'll be mentored by West Point folks and Pentagon folks. And then after they graduate high school, they won't go to college. They'll go immediately to work for Army Cyber Command. And this is nothing new. This has been going back decades, right? That you'll get the skills you need to succeed in the civilian world if you join up with the military.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of like a sexy new way of making that old argument.
Of being all that you can be.
Being all that you can be, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, you also make a point that it's not preparing for war, but dealing with its aftermath. That is really one of the most important video game-related legacies. So it can
Yes.
be used to therapeutic effect. What are some of the things that are being done to help people who have been through conflict and have ended up with PTSD or are suffering from traumatic brain injuries?
The biggest initiative so far, and I think the one that's gotten the best results in terms of treating PTSD, is this game called Virtual Iraq, Virtual Afghanistan, developed by this guy named Skip Rizzo, who has a long history of treating traumatic brain injuries, and especially in young male populations. And essentially, he took this game that the Army developed that didn't work very well for it, called Full Spectrum Warrior, and he used the imagery from that game. And the way it works is that whoever the patient is, you sit at a table with a computer screen in front of you, and you wear this virtual reality helmet. And your therapist is right next to you. And what they do is you talk out the experience that traumatized you over and over and over again over 11 or 12-week period. And as you're doing that, they're adding visuals into the game on the screen that are the same things or as close as possible to what you're telling them traumatized you. So if it was an IED explosion that you keep coming back to, they'll play that on the screen, and you're wearing this virtual reality helmet, so it's incredibly immersive for you. And there's also it's kind of like smell-o-rama. They have smells that replicate whatever you would have smelled at the time, and you're holding an M16 replica of an M16 rifle in your hand, so you have that. There's the ground can rumble if that's the case. And the point is to re-traumatize you over and over again and get you to the point of real panic with this experience. But with that, to take you through it every time, because your therapist is guiding the experience and you're talking it out with them the whole time, so that eventually you become not numb to the experience, but you come to realize that you can get through the experience, right? And so some of the fear of that experience is lessened because you've gone through it dozens of times in this safe environment, and it no longer has the power that it had over you to keep you in a state of that utter fear or trauma or whatever else.
Corey, what comes across to me is that you're very interested in a lot of these technologies that are being used in training methods and tools and educational devices, but also a little wary. I mean, is that how you come away?
I think there are a lot of really innovative, potentially mold-breaking ways in which the military is ahead of some civilian agencies in applying maybe new methods of learning and new methods of treatment that are conducive to 21st century realities. But if we believe too strongly in technology-related solutions, then often other solutions are given short shrift. And I think the way this plays out with the games is that the Pentagon kind of has a tendency now to, when they're faced with new problems, to throw a game at it, right? I say this in the book. It's like, oh, our soldiers need to learn to speak Baghdad Iraqi in 2 weeks. Let's give them a game. Mm-hmm. And that stretches across the spectrum now to, oh, our soldiers are coming back from war with all kinds of, you know, personal trauma and family trauma and everything else. Let's give them a game. And I don't mean that to take away from what a game can do, and it's certainly not the game maker's fault. I think a lot of the people within the military that are working with these games really, really are doing their best and they believe in it. But it's not something that should ever be excused for an overall comprehensive approach to either education or the treating of trauma.
Corey Mead, author of War Play, Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find more information on Corey's book and see some gameplay from America's Army at wordofmouthradio.org.